We're told the recession is over, but a lot of Christian ministries and relief organizations don't feel it. They're still short of donations and planning to shrink in 2011.
What we're hearing from nonprofits is that as many as 1 in 5 of them are making plans to cut programs or lay off more staff this coming year.
That's Sandra Minuti of Charity Navigator, an organization that rates nonprofits and follows the fortunes of all kinds of charitable organizations.
One of the unfortunate things about nonprofits is that even if the economy improves and we all feel better in the coming year, it'll be 6 months to a year before charities receive increases in donations.
Minuti says believers might consider giving a little more than they usually do this time of year. Minnesota officials say taxpayers have paid $15 million for 50,000 abortions in the years since 1995, when a Minnesota Supreme Court ruled public funds could be used to pay for abortion. Total number of abortions in the state has declined a little. This is SRN News. California regulators have overwhelmingly approved the nation's most extensive system, giving owners of power plants, refineries, and other major polluters financial incentives to emit fewer greenhouse gases.
In approving the key piece of California's 2006 climate law, the Air Resources Board hopes other states will follow the lead of the world's eighth largest economy. State officials are also discussing plans to link the new system with similar ones underway or being planned in Canada, Europe, and Asia. Some businesses that would be affected by the new rules say the system could lead to an increase in the price of electricity. The rate increases, however, would still need approval from the state.
SRN's Jeremy House. Just in time for Christmas, the year's only total lunar eclipse is set to occur Monday night or early Tuesday, depending on where you live. North and Central America are probably the best places to see it, weather permitting. Sky gazers in those regions should be able to view the eclipse for about 3.5 hours. This is SRN News.
The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we're tackling Stevens-Johnson disease with guest expert Dr. Dennis Ledford of the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Associates of Tampa Bay, right here in Tampa, Florida. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country, with average over 1,000 women during each of our last two events, and a combined 7,500 hours of education during these two events, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden, reduced cost of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And before we start today's show, I want to share with you that the Tampa Bay Women's Newspaper is a partner with us. And in that newspaper, I have in a column, it comes out every 2 months as a column. And in that column, I discuss how our programs, how our free programs have impacted a woman and or her family. And I know you'll enjoy reading that. The Tampa Bay Women's Newspaper is free. It can be found at over 3,000 Tampa Bay area locations, such as medical offices, health clubs, banks, specialty organic grocery stores, and beauty salons, and so forth. The articles are educational, informational, and resourceful. So with me today is guest expert Dr. Dennis Ledford. And Dennis, it's great having you again with us.
Steve, thank you for having me.
Dennis has provided his expert opinion and evaluation of a variety of topics on our radio show. We've done asthma together, both in and out of pregnancy. We've done allergies. We've done atopic disease. And Dr. Ledford is a regular at our annual Focus on Females Women's Symposium, which, by the way, you might want to take down, is March the 12th. It will be March the 12th, 2011, March the 12th, 2011, at the Tampa Convention Center. And again, it is free. At that event, we have physicians, seminars, approximately 20 seminars. We have free healthcare screenings, fitness classes, and wellness chair massages.
And after having participated for several years, I would encourage anyone listening to consider this event. I really do think it's a quality experience for getting education, information, having a time to ask questions that maybe you wouldn't have when you're with your doctor. So I would echo Steve's comments about that session.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Now, a little background on Dr. Ledford. Dennis Ledford is originally from Johnston City, Tennessee, received his undergraduate education at the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, and graduated from the University of Tennessee Center for Health Sciences with his MD degree. He was chief resident of the internal medicine at the University of Tennessee and completed fellowships in rheumatology and immunology at New York University, as well as allergy and immunology at the University of South Florida. He is currently a professor of medicine and pediatrics at University of South Florida. He is chief of the allergy and immunology section at the University Community Hospital and is on staff at Moffitt Cancer Center, TGH, James A. Haley VA Hospital, and University Community Hospital. And once again, we welcome you to discuss this disease, which fortunately is very rare, but boy, if you get it, it's a doozy.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, this is one of those things that I think doctors are scared about certain drugs because of this possibility, rightfully so, because the prognosis sometimes can be quite grim, although fortunately many times that's not the case.
Well, we're talking about Stevens-Johnson syndrome and its sibling disease, toxic epidermal necrolysis. So toxic epidermal necrolysis we will refer to in the show as TEN, the acronym TEN, as we go forward. Stevens-Johnson syndrome is usually referred to as Stevens-Johnson. And so well, we should first introduce this to our listeners as explaining what it is and what the prognosis is in the general case of Stevens-Johnson syndrome and the more advanced, more severe variation, TEN.
Thanks, Steve. I think this is a challenge because I think even for physicians, we get confused on the terminology. So as a patient or someone affected by these things, it is quite confusing sometimes. Let's start out by saying that If we think about Stevens-Johnson is a severe drug eruption, but it is difficult to sometimes prove whether you have it, you have to look at the clinical signs. And the signs usually are your skin's affected and your mucous membranes, which are your mouth, vaginal mucosa, the eye, and even the intestinal tract or lung. So it's skin and mucosa are affected. And it's usually due to a drug reaction. And in comparison, there's another condition called erythema multiforme that you didn't mention in the beginning, which I think gets confused in this discussion, because erythema multiforme is a skin eruption that affects the mucosal membranes, just like Stevens-Johnson, but is usually not due to a drug reaction. The prognosis with erythema multiforme is much better than Stevens-Johnson. And the worst form of Stevens-Johnson, or a sister or brother to Stevens-Johnson that's more severe, is called TEN, again, usually drug-related. So all three of these conditions affect the skin, the mucous membranes. Stevens-Johnson is usually drug-related. TEN is drug-related, but erythema multiforme is often not. But many times they look alike, and that's really why the confusion comes. They look alike.
On the line is Russ. Russ, welcome to the... Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Program.
Hi, Doctor. How are you? You're familiar with me. I have Stevens-Johnson syndrome and just wanted to call in. And my concern is, and Dr. Ledford already alluded to the fact that some people don't recognize the symptoms as TENS or Stevens-Johnson's. And that's what happened to me. I saw several doctors and nurses when I was in a severe stage of this with burns and high fever. Nobody recognized it, and it took me 3 days before I was admitted to an emergency burn unit to start to treat me anyways and what I had. And that's just my comment, I guess, is that what can we do, or question, what can we do so that the medical staffs are more familiar with recognizing the symptoms of this so it can be treated immediately?
That's a very good question. Russ, before we get into that, would you like to Russ is a patient of mine, taking care of his eyes. Russ, would you like to share with the listeners your story?
I would. I'm a police officer up in Chicago. I broke my ankle in February. I had a reoccurring wound that wouldn't heal. Saw several doctors and finally went to a wound care doctor. I was put on the drug Bactrim, which I had taken in the past with no symptoms at all. All of a sudden, I got a very high fever. My skin started to burn. I went to see a doctor up in Chicago. They thought I just had some sort of a flu or something, gave me a shot of steroid and sent me on my way home. Several days later, I went to see my wound care doctor. She recognized right away there was something wrong with me, sent me up to the emergency room, and then I ended up at Loyola Hospital in their burn care unit for almost a month with severe burns all over my body, damage to my eyes. Still in the healing process. This happened in July. Several surgeries on both my eyes and continued surgeries on my eyes and possibly on my ankle also again. So in a nutshell, that's where I stand right now.
And did you have any intestinal or lung involvement?
That's not apparent at this time, but okay. As my several of my doctors have told me, sometimes you don't know long-term what kind of internal damage I have, but so far, so good.
And so you've not needed to be on a respirator when you were in the intensive care unit?
No, I was not.
You're fortunate, right?
Yes, because the involvement of the internal mucosal surfaces, particularly the lung and the intestinal tract, make the prognosis much more grim. And I'm so glad for you, Russ, that you didn't have that involvement, because I think that probably contributed to your recovery, of course, along with a lot of effort on your part in care and on your physicians and nurses, because it's a struggle. And don't give up hope. I know you probably still have some symptoms. It may take a year or more, or even longer, for all the skin and mucous membranes to feel normal again. And a lot of patients get very frustrated and depressed sometimes because of the difficulty and the slow recovery from this condition.
Would you explain, Russ, how even now, 6 or 7 months after, you still have this periodic, how would you describe them, that like a flash that runs through your body?
Yeah, so almost usually from my waist up, but most of my burns were, you know, my chest, my back, my neck, my arms. And if my blood pressure goes up or down, if I go out in extreme heat or cold, take a shower, I get sort of almost a burning or a combined burning and shocking sensation in my body from my waist up. I have it less and less now. In the last month, I've gained a lot of my weight back. When I got out of the hospital at Loyola, I was down about 40 pounds. It took me 4, 5, 6 months to get back to my weight of about 190, which I just got back this week, pretty much hit my weight again. So it's not as severe and not as often. So I think a sign of improvement for me, or I sure hope so.
So Dennis, is there neurologic damage in the skin?
Yes, yeah. I think that's what happens. We don't always understand these things exactly because we don't have a good model for this problem, meaning we don't have a way of studying it either in animals or in other situations. And since it occurs almost without warning, it's difficult to do well-done controlled trials where we have scientific ways of studying a condition to know what the best treatment is, what exactly happens, and there's a lot of variability amongst individuals. So it appears to be a necrosis or a death of cells, including the nerve endings of the skin, which that's what causes sometimes this peculiar sensitivity of the skin, similar in some ways of what people with shingles would get, where you have a similar injury to the, I mean, that's a virus and not a drug reaction, but they also complain many times of these peculiar sensitivity of the skin and funny feelings and just sort of exasperating things that happen to them that they can't control.
It was interesting that Russ mentioned that he had previously taken the Bactrim without difficulty. Was that the first course of Bactrim? And I don't know how long he had taken the first, how many years ago in the past he had taken it, but was that potentially a sensitizer? But then again, you don't need a sensitizer to have this reaction.
Exactly. And this gets back to Russ's observation that the physicians and professionals that helped with him or cared for him early on didn't recognize this problem. And there's one of the difficulties is that you could have taken this drug many times in the past with no problem, or you could have never received it. And the very first time you received it, this happened. And that's a distinction between this problem and drug allergy. Drug allergy requires really you have to have been exposed to the drug before to become allergic. So although this is an adverse event or an immune response to something that caused a bad problem, technically we don't know if it's an allergy or not because we don't know if the immune mechanism, we don't understand it very well.
So would it be a better classification to consider a drug sensitivity or hypersensitivity?
Yeah, I would, or you could call it an adverse drug reaction that may be immunologic or allergic or it may be not, and therefore it's almost defies classification in some ways. But a lot of doctors would lump it under drug allergy, but some would also call it an adverse drug eruption and not even call the word allergy. When we say allergy amongst doctors, we mean there's an immune response that we can measure. If we say a drug reaction, that just means something happened, but we really don't understand it very well, and so we're not committing that it's an allergy per se.
Now, we know a number of drugs that have been identified as having the potential to create a Stevens-Johnson-like syndrome. And there's also now some genes that have been identified to increase the risk of developing this type of reaction. Is it recommended in family members of patients who have developed a Stevens-Johnson syndrome to be tested?
Well, possibly. It's certainly in certain ethnic groups, there's been some genetic markers that have been of value, and with certain drugs. For example, in European backgrounds, allopurinol is associated. Allopurinol is a medicine used for gout primarily. And so there's been some – allopurinol is one of the drugs that is associated with Stevens-Johnson. In European or Western ethnic groups, a certain HLA marker, which is a marker that's used to measure your difference between other members in the population and is used in bone marrow transplant, for example, or kidney transplant because it helps tell who's alike and who's different. But there's an HLA marker that associates with allopurinol. And in Asian populations, there's an HLA marker that may be of value too. So there may be circumstances where that's useful, but I would emphasize that the majority of Stevens-Johnson and TEN are not linked to specific HLA markers. So we don't generally do that.
And it can give you a false sense of comfort if
yes.
You test negative. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And Russ, if you can stick with us, we'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Our number to call in with anyone questions, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Outside of the county, toll free, 877-969-8600. Be right back.
Come relax, realign, and rejuvenate. The Blue Danube Spa, located at 210 South Kings Avenue in Brandon, offers customized massages for only $59. Call 813-445-0095 and say goodbye to your aches and pain.
Your IRA, 401k, 403b, or SEP may be infected with taxes. Set up a tax-free retirement plan. Call Robert or Chris Maggie with Maggie Tax and Life Insurance Services at 800-499-6091. That's 800-499-6091.
Shoot Straight Tampa. Tampa Bay's Firearms Superstore offers the area's largest selection of firearms and accessories, plus a state-of-the-art indoor firing range for both pistols and rifles. Shoot Straight Tampa buys and trades guns. Their on-site gunsmith provides repairs, parts, and ultrasonic gun cleaning. Monday is Ladies' Night. Concealed weapons classes every Tuesday and Thursday evening. Shoot by the hour gun rentals are available. Shoot Straight Tampa. Open 7 days a week. Call 813-627-8550. 813-627-8550.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit FocusOnFemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. He has written a best-selling, award-winning book, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome, published by Yale University Press. Dr. Maskin manages dry eye disorders using, when needed, innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has successfully managed difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He has been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2010. And as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America, we hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you have not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. With me today, as we discuss Stevens-Johnson syndrome, is our guest expert, Dr. Dennis Ledford. And Dr. Ledford is with the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Associates of Tampa Bay. On the phone with us is Russ. Russ is a patient of mine who has experienced Stevens-Johnson syndrome, has made it through it, is doing all things considered, doing well, and sharing with us his history. And I will have to share with our listeners that we have a hard break in about 2 minutes. So we'll go over some stuff and then break and come right back with more. One of the things that might be interesting to share is some statistics on Stevens-Johnson. There's approximately 1 case per million persons. All right, 1 case per million persons, but mortality rates can be high. For Stevens-Johnson, it's between 1 and 5%, with 10, which is the extreme case of Stevens-Johnson syndrome, 25 to 35% mortality rate. So, this is something that's important to recognize when it happens, which is your point, Russ, is how we can share that information, get the word out, to always have that in the back of our minds, not just the physicians, but again, educate the public. And this is, you know, why we do what we do here, is to educate the public to consider things, to rule out the bad stuff before we consider more innocuous things.
Yeah, I would point out, too, though, that early on, this condition that we're talking about, Stevens-Johnson, can look like a drug rash. And drug rashes are very common, really common. And so one of the things, getting back to what Russ had alluded to, the lack of recognition of this early on, is that physicians and nurses are programmed to think about common things first, and I think that's appropriate. And drug rashes being very common, when they first see the rash, they would say, oh, well, you just have a drug rash, which is not the same thing as Stevens-Johnson, but it can evolve over a short period of time, as in Russ's cases, into this terrible condition called Stevens-Johnson, which is one of the frustrations the patient and the physician and the nurse experience.
What's the tip-off, the high fever? Could that be a tip-off of something more sinister is going on?
Yeah, I didn't remember asking about Russ's early symptoms, but I think if it itches, it's a little bit reassuring to me that it's not Stevens-Johnson. When it's painful or burning, or the patient feels terribly bad generally, sort of achy and feverish, or has a fever, that's where you begin to worry more about these more serious drug eruptions like Stevens-Johnson and TEN.
Okay. Hang in with us, Russ, if you can. We'll be back.
Sure.
We've got a hard break, and we'll be back with more. This is the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. We are talking about Stevens-Johnson syndrome, a severe reaction to a drug. And our phone number to call in, 289-1860, 289-1860. Be right back with more.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. The United Nations has received hundreds of reports of people being abducted from their homes in Ivory Coast. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights says the people have been taken at night by armed assailants in military uniform. This follows 3 days of disputes over last month's presidential runoff elections. The UN Security Council holding an emergency session today amid rising tensions on the Korean Peninsula. South Korea is planning to conduct live fire drills this week on the same frontline island that the North shelled last month. Vice President Biden says the Justice Department is looking into what can be done to stop more document releases from WikiLeaks. And a veteran who is serving 5 life terms for killing a 14-year-old Iraqi girl and her family says his war zone experience made him, quote, crazy, making his first media appearance since the killing, Stephen Dale Green. More details on these and other stories at srnnews.com.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, and we hope you celebrate with family and friends.
It's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
Thanks for making 2010 historic in more ways than one.
I think the president has to acknowledge the fact that voters have spoken, and they've spoken in a much different direction.
And 2011 is shaping up to be just as memorable. Thanks for listening, and Merry Christmas from Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Amley and Amley Orthodontics, serving St. Pete in the Bay Area, gives you 3 reasons to smile. 1, the unique Damon Clear bracket system for the image conscious, shaping smiles with less treatment time and discomfort. 2, providing Invisalign, the clear removable treatment alternative for adults and teenagers. And 3, a plan to budget your cost of care. Orthodontics at its best. Call to schedule a complimentary orthodontic consultation at 727-381-1062. That's 727-381-1062 or online at amley-amley.com.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back. Once again, this is the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. It's about 1:32. With me is guest expert Dr. Dennis Ledford of the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Associates of Tampa Bay. We are discussing Stevens-Johnson syndrome, which is a severe drug reaction to a host of drugs. And with us on the line is Russ, who is made it through the bad part of Stevens-Johnson, was in the ICU up in Chicago, and managed to get through that and doing all in all pretty good. Would you say, Russ?
Oh, yeah. It's been a, the last month especially has been a great change in my symptoms. So, yes.
Excellent. I thought we'd go over, and again, anytime you have a question on what we're discussing, Russ, just jump right in here.
Okay.
I thought we'd go over some of the other drugs or class of drugs, Dennis, to share with our listeners, although potentially any drug could cause this reaction.
Yes, it is any drug, and I alluded to earlier that 2% of hospitalized patients have drug reactions, so obviously drugs cause a lot of problems with people. But again, this is a rare syndrome, thankfully. But the drugs I would encourage all of the listeners to think about really goes back to almost all the drug reactions we have are the four A's. And the first A is the allopurinol that we talked about. And that's a drug used for gout, so it may not be as relevant to the average person because they don't have gout, they don't take it. But the other three A's are very common. And these three A's, again, cause most all drug reactions when you think about it, but are also implicated in Stevens-Johnson. And those are antibiotics. We heard about Russ. He got a sulfonamide, which is the most common antibiotic that causes Stevens-Johnson and TEN. So antibiotics, anticonvulsants. These are medications that are used to treat seizures, but a lot of times now are used for pain sometimes. So you have to be aware that even though the medications are called anticonvulsant, meaning anti-seizure, they are maybe used in management of pain and other conditions. So that comes up when you're talking to your doctor about medications. And the last is analgesics, which are basically pain relievers. So you've got the four A's, again, allopurinol, antibiotics, anticonvulsants, and analgesics. And particularly with analgesics, we're talking about the drugs called NSAIDs, or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, aspirin being the first, but then there's many, many of these.
And these are used quite
very often. Very often. But keep in mind, most of the reactions to these four A's are not Stevens-Johnson, but the same drugs apply to Stevens-Johnson, that those list, particularly the sulfonamide antibiotics and then the anticonvulsants, maybe a little bit less with the analgesics for Stevens-Johnson, are associated. So when you're thinking about drug reactions, those are the four maybe medications you want to ask about.
And when we talk about the sulfonamide, as you mentioned, antibiotics is one of those four A's, and the sulfonamide is the highest, the most, that drug, the antibiotic, which has the highest incidence of Stevens-Johnson syndrome, the sulfa and the sulfonamide, would you explain to our listeners that just because the sulfa in the sulfonamide doesn't mean that all sulfa molecules will cause this reaction?
Yeah, that's a really a great point because I have a lot of patients. Again, I'm an allergist immunologist, and although I've been introduced as an expert, it takes a team of people to take care of Stevens-Johnson. You need ophthalmologists like Steve, but you also may need dermatologists, and you may need pulmonologists and people to manage like a burn unit with infectious disease experts. So there's no one person who has all the answers about Stevens-Johnson. But getting back to the point about sulfa, I often have patients come to me and say, I'm allergic to sulfur or sulfa. And that means that they're worried about sulfates in medicines or foods, and their concerns are obviously very heightened because they've heard you could die from sulfa if you got it again. Sulfonamide, which is the antibiotic, is a specific structure that seems to cause the reaction and isn't sulfur. So medications like diabetic medicines or sometimes medicines used for diuretics, which are help you lose excess sodium and water, may also have sulfur in them, but they're not sulfonamide. So they don't tend to cause the same level of reaction, nor do they, quote, cross-react. They don't just because you reacted to sulfonamide doesn't mean you're going to have a reaction to all sulfur-containing substances.
And this came to bear, Russ, you may remember in your case, because you know you had developed a infectious keratitis, right?
Yeah.
Infection of the cornea, which required antibiotics, which was we used gentamicin sulfate.
Right. And sulfate is a salt that really has nothing to do with sulfonamide, except they both have a sulfur atom, but they don't really cause problems when you have a sulfate if you've had a sulfonamide reaction.
It's a good thing, too.
Yes, because it's such a common, as you ran into with this patient, and obviously Russ is going to have a lot of anxiety about this, because if this happens again, he doesn't want to ever go through this again, and you're saying, well, let's just try this and see what happens, and because you have no test. That may be something we want to talk about. There's no test a doctor can offer to you to other than the HLA markers that we talked about earlier. There's no test to see, is this going to happen to me again, or would this drug cause it? Can you test me for it?
And even someone like Russ who's had a reaction, you know, if he were to require an anticonvulsant 5, 10, 20, 30 years down the road, obviously he needs to share the information with his doctor at the time that he had a Stevens-Johnson reaction to sulfonamide, so that doctor can, I guess, weigh out whether or not the problem is worth the risk.
That's exactly correct, but it's difficult when you can't test them to be comfortable to try the medication. So there are some anticonvulsants that do not have the structure. There's something we call aromatic structure. It means it has a certain ring structure. There are ways a doctor might be able to come up with a treatment that isn't as likely to cause Stevens-Johnson in this context.
Well, the important thing is, again, going forward, Russ, to, of course, share even 20, 30, you know, 40 years from now, share with your physicians that of your history with Stevens-Johnson.
Oh, I will. After what I went through, trust me, that will be the first thing that comes out of my mouth. And it just sort of brings me to another question, too. When I was treated at the burn unit at Loyola, and they were certainly fabulous there. They have a great burn unit there. I went through a process called sloughing. And are there other procedures other than that, or is that something that everybody does? Or are there other ways to treat the seriousness of the burns that I had?
Let's go ahead, maybe, Dennis, discuss sloughing and discuss in more detail what happens to the skin in this disease.
Now, sloughing is a term we use when there's sort of loss or shedding or damage to the point that it's no longer viable, so it just peels off of the skin. And particularly in this condition, it often forms blisters that spread diffusely through the skin, and then the skin just does, as Russ said, it peels or sloughs off, falls off. And that leaves a very vulnerable underneath skin, a skin that hasn't matured, and it's very easy to get infected. And that's why he's in a burn unit, because they have to treat you just as if you'd had second-degree burns, where you peel your skin blisters and then peels off. But in this condition, it's very widespread, very deep in the skin. It takes a while for the skin to regrow. But fortunately, if you can let it regrow without getting infected, it doesn't scar. However, in some cases, like in the eye, where you sometimes get a secondary infection, scarring can develop. And as the sloughing is due to a death of cells, we call it apoptosis. It's a kind of death that occurs in certain circumstances. And when all these cells die, initially there's no infection. They just die and peels off. And if you can heal and without getting infected, good prognosis. But it's a characteristic of Stevens-Johnson and TEN that you slough. Erythema multiforme, you also tend to slough. There are some other diseases, bullous diseases we call them, like pemphigus, where you tend to slough. So all these conditions sort of look alike, just like a thermal burn looks like what Russ had, because your skin sloughs, but they're all different syndromes.
Well, it didn't slough by itself. Just so we're clear,
so the debris
didn't slough by itself. They put me in, they sloughed all my skin off.
Okay. Well, there's actually controversy about whether you should let the skin on its own peel off or come off, or whether you should intentionally try to peel away the superficial layer. Usually in burns, they do peel it away so that they can get the skin, so they can sort of start from scratch, if you will. There's some theories that having the dead skin over on the top of TEN may be of help, sort of like the surgery you had where they placed an amniotic membrane, I think, in your eye, because the idea is that this dead skin may influence the apoptosis or slow it down. But other people feel you should remove it, like in a burn, and get it away, because it's a place where bacteria could grow that's sort of dead, and therefore your body can't fight the infection. So it's almost a way of getting yourself infected if you leave all that sort of
necrotic tissue,
devitalized skin on the surface of the new skin.
Okay. And, you know, the reason I bring that up is you're probably aware of it, but it's a procedure that I wish on nobody.
Yes.
It was truly torture going through that process, especially the first day. As they did it every other day, it got easier and easier, but the first day certainly they kept me awake when they did it, and it was something I hope that nobody ever has to go through again. And that's why I appreciate that you bring this to light, so that people might see these conditions and get into their doctor earlier and don't have to live what I lived through. And, you know, that's pretty much the purpose of my call in the first place.
And I want to emphasize that the trauma of this is quite quite devastating. And I think Russ is to be congratulated. He's out there talking about it and working through it, because sometimes you internalize these kind of traumas because of the pain and the frustration and the unknownness of it and the why me factor, and lack of recognition early on. I mean, all these things add to some of the frustration and psychological trauma that people with these very severe reactions undergo.
And if you could discuss, we were talking on break, Dennis and I were talking on break about the fact that there are confusing or this controversy as far as how to manage this, even
yes.
in the acute stage, certainly. Not so much in the eye setting, but in the systemic setting, the skin,
yes.
and whether or not to initiate systemic therapies like high-dose methylprednisolone IV or immunoglobulin or immunoglobulin or even cyclosporin. Maybe you can speak to that.
Yeah, I think that's another frustration, is even after the doctors have maybe finally been convinced that they know the diagnosis, then there's additional controversy. They don't always know what to do. And I think there are different therapies. And getting back to what I said earlier, there's no model for this condition. And there's no way to predict it, really. So how do you do a study to prove one drug works better than another? It's very, very difficult. It's one in a million. How do you find enough cases to ever do a study to determine this drug is better than that drug versus no drug? And I think that is one of the reasons there is so much controversy. You cannot study the problem in a way that's scientific. But it appears early on that steroids or corticosteroids or cortisone-like drugs or methylprednisolone, as Steve alluded to, there may be benefit early on. But as the disease is more severe, where a greater surface area is affected, the negative of the treatment, particularly the immunosuppressive effect of steroids, meaning it inhibits your immune system, and cyclosporin inhibits your immune system, the negative effect is you're more at risk of infection, and you've just had a severe burn, and you don't want to be giving drugs that increase infection. So again, the question is timing, what dose, and is it worth it after the fact, or you know, so forth. That's where the discussion. But the one thing I would emphasize is the drug needs to be stopped. So making sure you help your doctor to think about it and say, should we stop this drug? It was started a few weeks ago, and typically with Steven Johnson, it's within 4 days to 30 days, usually within 8 weeks. If it's a drug that you've been on in a short period of time, bring it to your doctor's attention. Remind them, ask the question, could it be this drug? Because I just started on this a month ago.
Hmm. And could any drug rash eventually turn into a Steven Johnson syndrome?
No. And again, I think that's important, too, because as we alluded to earlier, Russ wasn't recognized as having Steven Johnson. And we see a lot of drug reactions, even some drug reactions that make your skin peel superficially. But it isn't really Steven Johnson syndrome. Again, you normally require mucosal involvement. You have to have your tongue, your mouth, your throat, your esophagus, something internally involved, your eye again, your vaginal mucosa, before you call it Steven Johnson. Most drug reactions are just the skin. And they peel, they're not nearly as serious because they don't have that mucosal involvement.
The other thing that's quite interesting, in my training years ago, I had a case where a patient developed a reaction at the lip. And then with concomitant ophthalmic or ocular surface inflammation, it turned out to be a minor or a minimal extent of Stevens-Johnson syndrome. So you don't have to have a widespread involvement of the skin like Russ had, for example, and perhaps most patients. You could have a small area of skin involvement, blistering, for example, to be a Stevens-Johnson reaction.
That's exactly correct. And, of course, as an ophthalmologist, you're more likely to possibly see them, because their biggest risk is their eye injury, because the other parts are going to heal pretty readily on their own if it's limited in scope. But I think it gets back to the problem in recognizing this, because it can appear so many different ways, and it evolves fairly quickly, but at first it looks sort of innocent that you tend to get sort of misled, and you know, these things happen. I mean, we're all human, and we try to make the best decision we can, but sometimes we don't consider all the options.
Okay. Russ, any other questions or comments you'd like to share?
You know, just you touched real quickly on, testing my family or anybody that has it, if there's a concern with the rest of the people in your family as far as genetics goes, is it good enough just to let the family doctor know, or to let them know that, hey, I had an allergic reaction to Bactrim or a sulfa-related drug? Is that important to do?
Well, it's a great question, Russ, because I think it brings up the point in general, if I've had a drug problem or a drug reaction, a drug allergy, a drug response. Remember, we don't know always that there are allergies, but say I had something bad happen from a medication. Should my children be checked? Should my sister or brother be checked? Should my mother be checked? And in general, I think the answer would be no, that these things occur almost, again, one in a million, remember. One in a million is the occurrence of this. We mentioned that with certain ethnic groups and certain drugs, allopurinol in Western in ethnic backgrounds, and in certain Chinese groups, there have been some HLA linkage. In HIV-infected patients, there's a certain drug that causes reactions that can be similar to what we've talked about, and there's an HLA marker for that. But for an HLA, again, stands for human leukocyte antigen. It's a marker that helps us identify how people differ, and it's one of the things measured when they do transplants because we have to match people for HLA when you do a transplant. But those HLA markers are available, but they're few and far between. The average person with the average drug reaction, it really isn't genetic, and so there's no reason to think your child is more likely to react to penicillin if I've reacted to penicillin, or even in your case, Russ, that you've had this terrible reaction to sulfonamide. That really doesn't mean all your family members should avoid sulfonamides. It's, again, one in a million, and so it's probably not going to happen to them.
Yeah, I would have rather won the lottery in that one in a million.
Yeah, I know.
What are you going to do?
I
just like to thank you again for bringing it to everybody's attention, and you know, maybe somebody that's listening will either recognize that they have it, or somebody in the medical field will maybe look a little closer next time, certainly. And I learned from going through this that
I've got a question to ask Dr. Leffert, but we need to take a break. So, you may be interested in hearing the question answered, Russ. So we only have a few more minutes to go. We are ready for a break, so let's do that and be right back with more. It's calling with questions. We have a few more minutes. 289-1860. That's 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Outside of Hillsborough is toll-free 877-969-8600. Be right back with more.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. The best way to prepare yourself for what's coming up after the midterm election is to subscribe to Town Hall Magazine. Now, more than ever, you'll need Town Hall Magazine's fresh, intelligent reporting to dissect the meaning of the 2010 midterms and how the new landscape will affect the economy, taxes, immigration, and health care in 2011, and set the stage for the presidential elections in 2012. Log on to townhallmagazine.com today. Find out about a very special free bonus with your subscription. Townhallmagazine.com.
This is the Prescription Addiction Radio Show.
The Prescription Addiction Radio Show has been on your Sunday night radio for 4 years. The only radio show in America that is talking about what drugs are doing to our loved ones. How long is business and industry going to remain quiet while the destruction and cost from too many drugs continues to increase?
Sponsored by Novus Medical Detox, Suncoast Rehabilitation Center, and Chamberlain, Butler, and Crow. Sunday nights at 9 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. He has written a best-selling, award-winning book, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome, published by Yale University Press. Dr. Maskin manages dry eye disorders using, when needed, innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has successfully managed difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He has been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2010. And as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America, we hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you have not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860. And everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin. Focus on
Females. Okay, welcome back. This is the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today's topic of discussion is Stevens-Johnson reaction or Stevens-Johnson syndrome and 10 toxic epidermal necrolysis, which are basically drug reactions, severe drug reactions that could happen even if you've taken the drug before without a reaction to it. And it can cause significant blistering and sloughing of skin, can cause blindness. And in some cases, the severe cases, there is an association with up to 35% mortality. With me today discussing this has been our guest expert, Dr. Dennis Ledford of the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Associates of Tampa Bay. And on the phone has been one of my patients, Russ. Thanks for sharing this hour with us today, actually, and sharing your experience with our listeners and hopefully helping us educate people as to at least one of the things to think about should they have a funny reaction. Like in your case, it was Burns high fever for 3 days that wasn't immediately recognized, at least. Russ, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to emphasize that point, Steve, about that burning. That's one of the things you can bring to your doctor's or your nurse's attention. Most drug reactions that we've been talking about, the common ones, itch, or they're a little uncomfortable. But when it burns or hurts, that's something you really should emphasize and make sure it's clear that the professionals understand that this drug eruption, this drug rash, is burning me. And that may make them think more likely that this could be an early form of Stevens-Johnson or TEN and might get treatment sooner when maybe it could be helpful.
Did you, Russ, when did your skin start blistering? After?
Uh-huh. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
It started blistering. You mean after I started taking the drug?
Well, you said
I got a fever first.
Right.
I started to get a high fever. And then I started to get the blistering on my legs and my arms.
How soon after the fever started?
Probably two to three days afterwards.
And how high was that high fever?
About 103.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the doctor, the general practitioner that I saw, she gave me a shot of steroid and then a steroid prescription. And then the next day when I went in to see my wound specialist, referenced my wound, she was the one that she wasn't sure exactly what was wrong with me, but knew when she looked at my arms and my legs and took my temperature, knew right away that something wasn't right and it was severe, and immediately said, her office happens to be in a hospital, a local hospital near my house, and she immediately sent me up to the emergency room.
And you were blistering at that point.
Yes, I just started blistering my arm.
I guess that's that point.
Yeah. Well, blistering would be the tip off. But the other thing is a bruising looking rash. Most drug rashes look like measles, or they look like little red spots or something, and you press on them, they go away. if it starts to look like a bruise or a real dark color and it won't go away when you press on it, that's another thing you should call back and or make sure that the physician or professional knows about.
Okay, we got to sign off here. Dr. Ledford, take-home message for our listeners.
Well, the drugs are our friends, but drugs cause side effects, and work with your professional to make sure they know about what the problems are that you've had in the past, but don't be anxious about every drug. Remember the four A's we talked about, particularly anticonvulsants, antibiotics, analgesics, and have a great holiday.
Okay, thanks. And Russ, thank you once again.
Oh, no, thank you, and happy holidays to you. Thanks for bringing this to everybody's attention.
You bet. Have a great day. You bet. And for the upcoming Focus on Females radio shows, next Sunday is Sjogren's syndrome, a type of dry eye. And then we start the new year with sudden death in kids. And then the subsequent shows, orthotics will change your life. MRSA, that's methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, the emerging community menace. Followed by pediatric emergency rooms, how to stay healthy and avoid it, and followed by breast cancer management in the most cosmetically appealing way. So that's the lineup for the next several weeks. This is Dr. Steve Maskin, in hoping that you have a healthy and happy week. Happy holidays to everybody, and we'll see you next Sunday on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Bye-bye.
I bet Dennis Prager dislikes lousy service and high prices as much as I do. I'm Jay Steinfeld, and I started Blinds.com. For people who want window blinds, but not the runaround and confusion you get at home improvement stores. Plus, at Blinds.com, our prices crush home improvement stores. Yep, our prices are lower, and you get free advice from experts, free shipping, and no sales tax in most states. So when you need blinds, crush home improvement store prices and visit Blinds.com. That's Blinds.com.
Want to lower the cost of doing business?
Reduce email storage and get compliant.
Barracuda Networks can help. The Barracuda Message Archiver is an integrated hardware and software solution that indexes and preserves all email communication and attachments. With no per-user fees and a quick setup, the Barracuda Message Archiver is the best solution for reducing the cost of email storage while ensuring government and litigation compliance. Powerful yet affordable security, networking, and storage solutions trusted by more than 80,000 businesses worldwide. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM for your free evaluation unit.
888-ANTI-SPAM.
Or visit
Your choice for intelligent talk. Talk Radio 860 WGUL, Dunedin, Tampa Bay, a service of Salem.